fries. Wake up. Shake up your business.
Hello. Time for the Enterprise Breakfast Podcast. Oh, we love to bring you the best bits of our daily breakfast show, but let's face it, every bit is a best bit, a fresh and lateral perspective on the world to help kickstart your day. On this episode, the power of persuasion, including some very important tips in the subtle art of getting what you want.
Disrupt Radio.
Come on, let me convince you. I know how to do it. I looked it up. I put it in the search engine. How to be absolutely authentic. How to sound genuine. How to sound like a reasonable person with a valid point of view. Because, like, there must be a trick when you're talking shit, right? There must be. It's a way with words. It's some sort of cadence to the voice. That's you. Some sort of sentence structure. That's you. A conviction that what you're saying carries weight and truth and reason that reflects you. I looked it up. You can rehearse authenticity. Even if the gems that fall from the treasure trove of your mind on closer inspection amount to nothing more than evil shit, people believe you. Do you believe you? Do you know the consequences of what you're saying? Or does nothing matter? Will you say anything to get what you want?
This is Enterprise Breakfast with Libby Gore on Disrupt Radio.
So how difficult is it to affect change, especially at the highest level? Well, Managing Director of Executive Council Australia, Jeanette Cotterill, is one of our most respected and experienced advocacy and media consultants wandering around Canberra. She says while it might seem difficult, living in a democracy means there are ways to get to the ear of our lawmakers.
Anyone is entitled to go to any representative of the government, the opposition, the crossbench, the bureaucracy, and make a case for policy change, to ask for funding, to stop funding cuts. That's the joy of living in a democracy. Where they can be more effective, obviously, is understanding the landscape of which they're trying to navigate. And that means understanding what the imperatives are driving the government. Are we in a cost of living situation at the moment? How does that impact what I'm about to ask them for? Am I advocating for a social or health benefit that will give dividends for a large slice of the community? I think it's very important for any organisation and individual, and individuals have the power, and sometimes they have more power than a foreign multinational, as we can discuss. Anyone has the power to make change for good. Where they're least effective is when it's self-serving, when it's with a tin ear, when it's not done, frankly, in the social good. And it's surprisingly how many people fail that test pretty quickly.
Really?
So it stuns me a lot of the time that, yeah, so many organisations, one, forget the basic principles of good negotiation and behaviour. One, ask nicely. Yelling at the government on the front pages of the paper is often very ineffective unless it's done by a very sympathetic cohort of the population, like older Australians or cancer patients or others that have far more sympathy than you, a corporate who really doesn't appear to be acting in the public interest. And also ask nicely, you know, ask with grace, ask with a good understanding of what impact you're having if you do get what you want. Will the government be rewarded at the next ballot box if they give you what you want? Will they be punished? Is there a cost to kicking you or ignoring you? So there's a lot of factors that go into negotiating a good outcome, whether it's policy or funding or stopping bad things from a government who might be making policies on the run or not aware of consequences. And that also happens a lot.
Interestingly enough, you can go to your local member in their office, in your electorate, if you choose, and then there's Parliament House. Which would you say is the most effective form of lobbying? Going through a local member, which is a singular path, or somehow having someone knocking on doors on your behalf with one of those orange lanyards, having access to a whole heap of people? Is that the way to do it?
It really depends on what it is you're trying to achieve, the time frame you have. I advocate to all my clients, and I'll use childcare as an example. For years, they built the case for why parents needed more support with increased subsidies, that you weren't just a babysitting service, they actually were integral to the economy of the country. That was years of work from that organisation or that sector before the election came along and both parties realised it was actually going to get them some good, you know, return on, yeah, on from voter value. And but they would go to the childcare centre, would invite the local MP out. They would also come to Canberra and have really effective meetings. But first of all, they had to kind of salt their minds with their ideas. And most of the best ideas and the best engagement happens back in the community, especially if you are connected to that electorate. And especially if your local MP happens to be influential, either they're in a marginal seat, which always helps. They are an independent who are incredibly powerful, especially if they hold the balance of power.
Yeah.
Or they hold a position of influence, which again is very important, particularly in the backbench. So our organisation, whether it's a sector of childcare, Playgroups Australia, which I do pro bono work with, whether it's cancer patients and doctors, the more voters you can touch, the more powerful your message becomes.
And tell me about the orange card system of Parliament House. How does that work? I understand that it's under review.
It is. Look, there's a parliamentary review at the moment, and as it should be, because it is a bit of a free-for-all. And, I mean, for me, I've been a conviction advocate. We don't use the lobbyist word since those terrible Queensland politicians ruined it for everybody. As a conviction advocate, I've been using that orange pass for 24 years and I use it respectfully. Unfortunately, a lot of people can use it and they're not on the register, the political register, which is under the Attorney General's department. So a lot of people, and this is the complaint of some of the politicians, there's a lot of people wandering the halls of the pond, the bubble, and we don't necessarily know exactly who they are. We hope that they're good people. Most are. There is a lack of visibility, and I guess particularly from my point of view, I'm considered a third-party lobbyist, so I'm on the register. If you do the same work but work in a law firm or an accountancy or in a business, you are not necessarily, you don't need to go on the register, so they don't.
They don't know who's wandering around.
If you're
around
an association and call yourself something very odd and you're a bit of a, you know, a cover for a paid organisation, you don't go on the register. So there's a lot of opaqueness about the sector, which you know, there's nothing that to suggest anything wrong is happening. I don't believe there's any, well, I don't know, any corrupt behaviour, but I think transparency and shiny little sunlight on everybody who has access to Parliament House is a positive thing.
Enterprise Breakfast.
So it seems there really are ways to get your voice heard in the halls of power. And what about when it comes to selling what's in your best interests, like exercise or diversity or even sun smarts, you know, selling some kind of social message? Well, director and founder of The Honeycomb Effect, Carolyn Miller, is a dedicated marketing specialist. And with 20 years' experience in advertising, she knows a thing or two about why this type of persuasion is good for the economy and social change.
When we actually do look at how we can include people living with, I don't want to even say disability, it's just different people, it really can improve the way that we think about our own interactions with them and then how that actually flows on into what we can do economically with that as well. I really do think that ads like this are critically important for us to challenge our own belief systems, because this idea of being people just stop doing things because they assume they can't is something that is very, very common. And I think even if you look at kind of what we've done, managed to do with gender over the kind of the past 30 years, you know, it used to be assumed that women didn't want to or couldn't do woodworking in school, so we were never offered it. It's kind of come a long way since then.
It's fascinating. Social impact marketing, is that what you call it when you do things like the very old commercial? I think was the first exposure that I've ever had to it, you know, primary school age, the old Life Be In It.
And that was a fact.
Today, live more of your life, be in it, yeah.
Cool, right?
These are healthcare campaigns.
It was a healthcare campaign, but behind that, there were very serious health economics to get Australians more active, reduce the obesity rate and take the pressure off the public health system.
Absolutely. And, I mean, it's not something that, unfortunately, it seems to have solved. So we're continuing to kind of go down a negative path. And it does seem to be that states and a few of the different government departments are still really making an effort to try and put out campaigns about healthy eating and being more active. But when you kind of compare that against the onslaught that we have from fast food advertising and the other things that are a bit maybe cooler and sexier and have a lot bigger budgets, it can be really difficult for those messages to cut through. But I think for many of us, particularly for those of us of a certain age who remember watching Norm on Life Being at TVCs, it was, in a way, shaming a lazy lifestyle. And now we've almost got even more opposition to things like that with, for instance, things like the fat acceptance movement or health at every size, which is basically saying that, no, my weight's not a problem, and you've kind of got a whole kind of internet full of misinformation as well to try and overcome, to try and improve public health.
This is interesting, isn't it? There are a lot of combative messages and ones that don't sit and that don't align perfectly. I hadn't actually thought of Life Being It being there to combat all of the fast food commercials and all of the snack commercials. I hadn't actually put it in context. I'd actually just looked at it in isolation as being a social health message to get us more active, but I hadn't seen it as ambush marketing.
Well, I mean, and at the end of the day, I mean, a lot of, you know, fast food and processed food companies spend a lot of money lobbying the government as well to try and make sure that messages are around exercise rather than food, which is an interesting, which
do
is
they
an
really?
Interesting message in itself. Yeah, there's definitely, I mean, it's more prevalent in the US, where you kind of, you do see a lot of lobbying for specific food groups to kind of suppress some messages and make sure that there's a focus on exercise more than calories. But I do think that there's a consumer backswing against that now. But yeah, there's definitely, there needs to be an alternative message when you're constantly being kind of thrown out all of the poor choices messaging, which is all very slick and sexy. There is a responsibility to kind of come out and say, hang on, is that really the right choice that you're making? But there's legal implications for it as well, like advertising to children. We can't put junk food ads on TV, particularly designed to advertise to children.
But those regulations aren't on the internet yet, are they?
They're not, and the internet is a wild west.
And that's where it's crazy. Like, no one, the kids aren't watching television, they're watching YouTube, and there are no regulations.
Correct. And I mean, there's some absolutely, there's no regulation on, for instance, YouTube advertising whatsoever. And in fact, just recently, there's been a lot of backlash about deepfake advertising, where you have people impersonating others, kind of making claims or trying to do kind of scam messages that look like ads, which is really, really scary. So yeah, it's very distrusting. But also influencers are a big deal at the moment.
Oh, they are too.
So, it's exhausting.
We need more time.
The amount of health and nutrition advice, in inverted commas, is crazy.
Oh, I hope you loved all of that. And if you liked what you heard, can't wait until next week for more. You know what? You don't have to. You can just tune into the live show on DAB Plus if you're in Brisbane, Sydney or Melbourne, or come to Disrupt online at disrupt.radio.
Disrupt Radio. Tune in to opportunity.